Welcome to the Trauma Survivorhood Podcast. I'm your host, Sarah, an IFS-informed trauma recovery coach. This show features interviews from guests all around the world as they share their impactful stories and deliver hope and inspiration through their personal post-traumatic growth. We explore and discuss resources and coping strategies to support the survivor community to thrive in their own healing journeys. Enjoy. Welcome back to the Trauma Survivorhood Podcast. I'm your host, Sarah. I have with us today, Eric Christensen. Thank you so much for being here with us today. Seven-time Southwestern Emmy Award recipient Eric Christensen is a documentarian whose four films focus on the impact of trauma on individuals, families, and communities. A trauma survivor himself, having lost his home in the Santa Barbara Painted Cave fire disaster, he understands trauma and the resiliency of the human spirit and how important hope is for us to heal. His new film, Unmasking Hope, follows a desperate people and their stories of surviving many of things that we have only heard snippets of on the news. They've lived through mass shootings, terror attacks, combat, and sexual assaults. These brave trauma survivors don masks to hide their pain and suffering as they navigate their new existence of PTSD. In order to heal, they must confront what has happened to them to begin their healing journey from seclusion to inclusion. I love that. And as we follow their moving stories, we are all inspired to find hope again and who we were born to be. His previous films have been transformative in the recovery process of thousands of people whose lives have been compromised medically, mentally, spiritually, and physically by trauma. By spotlighting these survivors and their journeys and their stories, Eric has been able to help unify a variety of audiences around the power of hope and educate the general population about the complexities of trauma. So, Eric, thank you so much for being here today. Tell us a little more about your journey as a trauma survivor yourself. Now you're helping others tell their story. How did you get here?
Well, thanks, Sarah. How did I get here? Well, 1963 community hospital in Long Beach. No, with Mother's Day coming up, yeah, hats off to all the moms that stuck with this, because yes. You know, my mom played a big part in me following my dream and essentially my calling. And so, you know, my dream has always been to make films since I was 8 years old. Wow. I made my first film with a script, and it was a lot like Steven Spielberg's film, The Fablemans. And I had my Super 8, or it wasn't even Super 8. It was a regular 8 camera, and I made all my little movies. And I'm not just saying this. I mean, I distinctly remember as a kid, I'm like, why do I am so compelled to do this? I had some sort of message, and I never was really sure what it was. And so, you know, I started working professionally in the industry around 13 years old because I was a big kid. And I was able to get in on you know, as a production assistant on sets and things. And so I ended up going to California Institute of the Arts in the 80s. And that's a lot of things coalesced with me there. Yeah. Because I did learn a lot about filmmaking, but it wasn't just that. I was in a group of other people like me, a lot of artists. There was different disciplines. We had dance, we had music, we had fine art. And I got to experience all of that and some really experimental stuff, you know, a lot of performance art. And it really opened up my mind to like the possibilities of communication and how film ends up being kind of something that can use all of that. And so we flash forward again to somewhere 1990, June 27th, 1990. I'd been working in the industry for quite a while after I got out of California Institute of the Arts. And I was an editor and also a director, and I was doing a lot of music videos, a lot of flashy stuff. And then June 27th, 1990, my home burned down in the Painted Cave fire disaster. And that was kind of the end of an era and the beginning of a brand new thing. And it took me 7 months to kind of figure out really what that was. And in that 7 months, I never really had a a social relationship with drugs or alcohol. So I really took it to the extreme then. And what they say, I hit my bottom. And then the woman that's my wife now gave me this guy's card. Said, go see him if you're sick and tired of being sick and tired. And went and saw this guy, Don R. And I started doing this outpatient thing, but it wasn't necessarily the outpatient thing. He introduced me to a group of souls that didn't have to use drugs or alcohol a day at a time. And so I've since then, I've kind of joined that group for 32 years now. And my work changed, and I really saw that fire as a chance to wipe the slate clean. And I started anew, and I did a film on the fire called Faces in the Fire about surviving that fire. And I interviewed a lot of other survivors, and we premiered it 1 year after the fire. That was also the shortest turnaround I've ever had on a documentary too.
I was going to say, and, yeah, wow, that is very, very fast.
I know.
Wow.
I think about that now. I'm like, that's crazy. And I found my calling, because there is healing on both sides of the camera. For me, for the people in the film, it's a powerful experience for the people in the film, and then for the communities that it's shown in. And that was the very beginning. And then there's three other films. We can get more into that. But that is actually, believe it or not, the truncated version of how I ended up here now. And God's guided this whole thing. I'm a very spiritual man. And thank God for my wife and my family. So to allow me to be able to continue doing this.
That is really, really beautiful. Yeah, I love this idea of you telling your story through their stories, right? Because it was about the fire that took your home from the others, and you being the one to really be their platform to do that and to bring healing to your own community that started this on. That's really, really beautiful. What was the inspiration of this latest film? So this latest film is called Unmasking Hope, the one that we see there behind us. So who is this film for? What was the inspiration behind this?
You know, I can go all the way back to Faces in the Fire. Faces in the Fire was what I did with that film. I interviewed over a dozen survivors and emergency workers and things, but mainly over a dozen survivors. I didn't follow just one story.
Yeah.
And in putting that together, I noticed everybody's story was very different, but it had the same, I guess you would say, through line. It had the same arc.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my gosh. And it's like, I realized that I believe God has a plan for us with our healing. Mm. Just like we get a scratch, it scabs over and then it heals, and there's a process to it. And I believe there's a process to healing from trauma. And the problem is things get in the way of that. Society, ourselves, we get carried, you know, we get stuck in different phases. But I was fascinated by that. And each film that I did, I progressed a little bit further with that. I did my next film, Homecoming, A Vietnam Vet's Journey, and I interviewed several different Vietnam vets. And I'm like, wow, they're telling the same story. Then Searching for Home, I went to the next level with that. And it was vets of all ages, of all different wars and different genders, female veterans. And they're telling the same story. World War II vet is telling the same story that the guy's coming home now, just different. And so with Unmasking Hope, I'm like, okay, I found my thesis. And it's a beautiful idea. And it creates so much in the viewer to be able to see different people that seemingly have no connection, you know, finishing each other's stories kind of in a way. So I'm like, let's really mix it up and tell a story about different traumas. With Unmasking Hope, I thought I'd take it to the next level, that whole thesis, and have different traumas. And not only do we have different traumas, but this is the most diverse movie I've ever made. You know, people of all different genders, races, and it's just all telling the same story and different traumas. So we have 9/11, we have mass shootings, we have our veteran. I have to always have my veteran in the film. And we have, you know, also sexual abuse and first responders. And so And again, you know, there's always that moment in the edit suite after I've been working on this now for years.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I hope this all really comes together. And it did. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of the core of the progression of my films. And then the title itself, a good friend of mine, Pam Pyre, and she's also associate producer, named it Unmasking Hope. Because mm-hmm. we had this big discussion about, you know, how the mask, and we can talk a little bit more about that, but, you know, the mask functions in a lot of cases. You know, the mom that has to get up and get her kids to school and get to work and things like that, we put that mask on, even though we're working through our traumas or whatever it is, we put those different masks on. But it's when the mask kind of overtakes us and that work becomes workaholism, you know, and then that it gets a little bit too much, then the mask, we can't take it off. Mm-hmm. And then that's about where we come in with Unmasking Hope. So that's the two different sides that we took to developing this film.
Wow. What was that running thread between each of these stories that you kept picking up on?
Oh my gosh. You know, it's, you know, that's really interesting because it's hard to put my thumb on necessarily. Like, what is that thread? It's just the arc is, you know, it's, you know, the trauma, the shock, then being lost and just not knowing what happened. And was that real or mine wasn't as bad. And so maybe it's not as real. And this purgatory and this lost space and time that all these survivors have. Mm. And it's that moment of, you know, either on TV or running into somebody or through a wonderful organization like givenhour.org. Givenhour is our official outreach partner. And after the borderline shooting, they put together some group counseling. And the survivor in the film, Molly, decided she'd go to this group counseling after so many attempts to finally go. She finally walked into that room. And here's the miracle that happens. You find somebody else that has went through the same thing, and you're not alone anymore. You're not crazy. There's other people that have went through a similar event that have been having a similar reaction. So that lost time, all that time is other people have done it too, but it's that identification. I call it the miracle identification. Oh, you too? Wow. Me too. I'm not alone. And then somebody in that group usually is a little bit ahead in healing, you know, and sometimes it's a professional group. Or just a friend, and they're a little bit ahead, and then they can, you know, stick out that hand and lead you into, you know, your first steps into healing. And then healing takes place in so many different modalities. I could go on and on. But then the eventual outcome of this is when these people get to a certain point of healing, like Molly did after going to the Given Hour group, she was able to go back to Given Hour and volunteer as a peer counselor. Mm. And now she works there actually as a peer counselor for other people that went through mass shootings. And her healing has skyrocketed at that point. And so that's a kind of a common story. I can tell you about J.R. Franklin, a Vietnam vet, and his story matches the same kind of steps. But he, you know, was a Vietnam vet in the 70s. And he, you know, he was what you call a river rat. You know, he went through those little holes and tunnels and flushed out the Viet Cong and then served our country and came home. But the same steps that Molly went through as a mass shooting survivor. So there you go.
Wow. Yeah. I could see that for sure. The feeling lost, right? And feeling alone. And then when you find that bit of connection moving forward, that's really great. When you are working with different people and interviewing them, what do you find is their biggest hurdle? Or maybe it's a fear. Or what's their struggle in telling their story?
You know, it's interesting because I guess overall, that's really kind of hard to sum up. But overall, and this really for all the listeners and viewers, this is very powerful, is you can't quantify your trauma. You can't put it on a chart. Well, mine wasn't as bad. And so people sometimes almost feel, well, I survived. They almost feel embarrassed to talk about surviving their trauma. Or it's like, well, it's only this and I'm fine. And you know, and you can't even see anything wrong with me on the outside. There's other people, you know, especially with the veterans, there's other people that lost arms and legs. You know, you can't see what's wrong with me. So it's that inner turmoil and that frustration that they feel of a little bit of survivor's guilt thrown in there is, you know, my trauma doesn't really qualify. But going through the process of being in the film and seeing themselves tell their story, and then having other people after seeing the film come up to them and say, wow, that was really powerful, then it validates their experience. And, you know, I want to say to everybody listening that, you know, your trauma is your trauma. It's something to honor. And even though maybe it's just my dog passing away or something like that, it is your trauma. And you know, and the natural thing is to honor that. And so you can start to move through it and create your new narrative post-trauma.
Yeah. When you are doing these interviews, do you ever find yourself being triggered hearing these stories?
You know, it's interesting because there's two kind of answers in that. Number one is, you know, yes, I'm a trauma survivor, but it's not the obvious trauma that I survived. It's not like the fire, you know. I'm kind of flippant about things now and everything, but it was the trauma that I inflicted on myself. So that's by my drugs and alcohol. So that, you know, what that to just qualify that part. But do I ever feel triggered by it? Is I've spent like my whole career in the last 30 years working towards being able to honor the story and tell the story with and get inside the story and fully empathize without it crisscrossing into my own being. And that's it. I have a whole Dr. Jeremy Crosby out of Wichita, Kansas, really saved me there, because with searching for home, coming back from war, I was very kind of racked, I guess you could say, having heard all these stories and went, because I'm an empath and it really affects me. And he started working with me on a way to really kind of debrief and handle that. And the core way for me, and it is, I think it works with anybody, is we have to realize we have our own emotional being. And then there's an emotional state, and I can be brought into an emotional state with another individual through, you know, empathic kind of connection. And that's an honor. They're letting you into something really, really close to them. And being very vulnerable. So it's a real honor. I mean, so many times I have some of these survivors tell me, this is the first time I've told this, or the second person I've told this to. And so I honor that as a huge gift. And that's the emotional state I'm able to enter with them during this interview. But after the interview and everything, and, you know, I have to realize I have my own emotional being. That's me. And that emotional state then, and that interview and that whole situation, I kind of put into a beautiful box, and I have a whole visualization of this. I put it into a beautiful little wooden box, and I store it with all the other ones back there, and I'll take it out again when I'm editing, or when I'm putting the film together again, or even when I see the people, and I can go right back into that emotional state and connect to that again. Yeah. You know, and but the core is it's an honor. And I have to understand it's an honor to receive these stories. It's not a burden. that I'm not being burdened by what they went through. I'm being honored by them being vulnerable enough to share something so intimate with me. And so this connection I'm able to form with them is just a total honor. And so that's the long answer for that. But yes, I do get triggered, but not really anymore. I just honor it. And I look back and I'm like, thank you for letting me be such a important part of your life by telling that story to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, they're opening their own doors to welcome you into this intimate space. And yeah, I can see the reverence that you hold there for that. I love that. I know you talk about quite a bit about the violence being so prevalent in the world, right? And I know that violence has a lot to do on our mental well-being. So, you know, what does violence, whether it's happening to you, you're watching it, you're witnessing it, you're viewing it, what is that doing to people mentally as they're hearing about it, seeing it, or living through it?
You know, that's a really interesting question, because this is so weird. I went to go see John Wick 3, you know, and it's constant violence. And it's just like, are we numbing ourselves? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like we have, and I'm not making any direct connections or anything. We do have a lot of gun violence. We have a lot of things like that. But when your main source of entertainment is something that's so violent based. Mm. I mean, there's a weird, it's not even a disconnect, it's a connect. Mm. And so I think we've, and with mass shooting after mass shooting, you know, I do think we kind of get numb to it. I don't have any answers. I'm one person that, gosh, I don't profess to know like the exact clue to things. I'm more of an observer and you know, but I know every time a mass shooting happens, it just, all the people that I know that have been through mass shootings go through it all again, you know? And so, you know, violence creates more violence, and it's just, we get numb to it. And I went to the Auschwitz exhibit. I haven't been there. I've talked to people that have been there, but I went to an Auschwitz exhibit, and it was very thorough and very intense. And it was a tough thing to do. I think we need to learn about it. You know, it's just not a easy thing to do. So, you know, walking out of there, I'm like, okay, wow. Yeah. You know, I wish I kind of didn't. But then the other thing is, you know, as a human being, I need to know, I think, what history was. And it was extremely thorough. It was at the Ronald Reagan Library out here in Simi Valley. And it was their exhibit. And wow, talk about violence on such a huge human scale. But there's a lot of allegories, and there's a lot of stuff, but a lot of things to learn in there. And gosh, it's amazing how things work in God's world.
Yeah, that's very well said. Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing not just your story, but so many other people's stories through film. I always like to ask all of our guests, in your personal journey, as you were healing and getting through what you've been through, what were some of the resources that were most powerful and most helpful in your healing?
Well, I say, now resources, I mean, as far as like pointing out a book or anything, that's hard for me to point out a book, maybe the Bible, and maybe the text to the big book of the text that I go, the group that I go to, trying to remain anonymous here. But but the resources as far as people and things, it's once I found my tribe, you know? And once I found some other alcoholics and some other drug addicts that are in recovery, it was like, whew, okay, I'm home. You know, and this is, you know, and this is not bragging. It's God, for some reason, God chose, I don't know why, but I have 32 years of sobriety and I go to 2 meetings a week still, just so I can go be with my tribe. And I can hear what they're doing and I can hear their struggles. And last Saturday was a powerful meeting because I just heard so much struggle, but also so much hope. You know, and it's weird because hope doesn't come out of good times. It comes out of struggle. And I think one of the biggest resources is sitting with my tribe, other people like me. And then sometimes, you know, isolation is a killer for people that have with mental health issues, depression, anxiety and stuff. And it just, I just encourage everybody, encourage my family members that are going through any sort of trials with, you know, instances of that, to look for other people.
Yeah.
Look for their tribe, look for a group.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you can breathe just a little bit easier. So I think that's my biggest resource is my group, my people. That get me. I'm not crazy. I am crazy, but I'm not alone in being crazy.
Yeah. That's great. That is great. That's a great way to say it, right? Yeah. Oh my goodness. Eric Christensen, thank you so much for joining us today on the podcast. It's been a great conversation. Where can people find you? Where can they find your films? How can they reach out to you and connect with you? And we'll link all this up in the show notes for everyone to find you.
Well, I'm super, super excited that Unmasking Hope now is on public television, so you can look at your local listings. You can also go to our website, unmaskinghopethemovie.com, and click on, there's a little finder there. You can put in your zip code, find out where it's showing on air, or just download the PBS app on your smart TV, and there's Unmasking Hope on the PBS, and it looks great. I'm really happy with their distribution and everything. And here's the cool thing about the PBS app on your TV is you're also not going to get a bill in 2 months after your free period is done and be like, how did I get all these services? Because the PBS app is free on your TV. So you can watch Unmasking Hope there. You can find out more about me, you know, on ecproductions.com and what's going on. And, then Unmasking Hope on Insta and Facebook. Awesome. Join us. We have a really cool music video coming out associated with the film from my musician friend, Spencer Barnett. So that's pretty exciting. We just finished that last night. So
awesome.
Things Very are good.
Cool. Oh, that's so great. Thank you again for joining us today. Thanks for sharing all of these amazing survivors, their story of hope, and their similar arc with their different stories. It's very intriguing to notice something like that. So I'm very excited to be able to check that out. And we'll have all that linked up in the show notes. So thank you so much. Have a great rest of your day.
I will. Thanks, Sarah.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening or watching this episode of Trauma Survivorhood. For more info, show notes, and links, check out the episode guide below. Until next time, be well, survivors.